my name's obviously Toby, and if you were going to call me, I was going to say I'm Lyle and I pass, because I think there is a time and place for humor. Like Lyle said, I was one of them that I took myself too seriously, so now is a pretty much a time to laugh for me. I mean, everything was woe is me and misery in my past life, and I'm a new creation because of God, and I've learned a few things in this here book. It's a Bible. I hope you all have one. I hope you all have a study Bible, because Bible's kind of hard to read. I say this every time, and it breaks it down for you and puts it to me in terms that I can handle, because, you know, I was a high school dropout. So I guess I'll give a little of my story so maybe you guys can find some similarities with me in your life. That's what it's all about, finding the similarities. We can find the differences all day, but I mean, deep down inside, that's not the thing to do, especially not the thing to do in this Bible. It says, love your enemies and love your neighbors and love the people that aren't like you. And that's something I never did in my life, because there was nobody like me. I'm a unique person. I'm special in every way that there is possible to be special. And I'm glad that I came to my senses, you know, through God.
Amen.
I was raised in a little town in Indiana, Hamilton, right way up north. Single mother till she got married. Married an abusive father. I was always worthless. I could never do anything right. I was physically abused. I was probably beat every day, you know, like almost clockwork. I expected it, you know, because I couldn't do anything right. And you know, when you're raised like that, you kind of get that. You get to believe in it. You believe what people tell you, especially at a young, impressionable age, you know. And it was at the same time we were going to church and stuff, and undeveloped mind and trying to understand God is not the easiest thing, you know, especially when you have your father beating on you. And then I seen Jesus get hung on the cross and his father let him do that. You know, and I thought that was a bad thing. I said, how is that a good thing to let your son up there and die? And I did not know what it was until I turned 45. You know, that many years of living in darkness and not knowing what the truth was. Thinking the truth was that I was worthless and not worthy of love. Didn't deserve love. Especially sacrifice for me, you know, and that's why I'm glad there was Jesus, because he did this for us, you know, for not just me, but everybody, you know, the good, the bad, but the bad. I mean, how many, when you think of it, sacrificing your life for somebody else, and that somebody else is a thief and a drug addict and a pervert and a woman beater or a child toucher, you know, that's what God, you know, sent Jesus for. He did that for all of us, you know. Yeah. From, you know, he didn't do it for the person that had the perfect life, but nobody's ever had the perfect life except the one that gave up his life for us, you know. So I did not know the truth. I have this little note and it says, you don't know, if you don't know him, you don't know what the truth is. My whole life I didn't know him, so I didn't know the truth. It wasn't until pretty much 2017, August 4th, a homeless ministry picked me up off the streets here in Fort Wayne. They asked me what I was doing in Fort Wayne, and I said I came to get treatment for drug abuse. I'm a 26-year meth addict and alcoholic, and there's no facilities in my town unless you got like $25,000 to pay for treatment. And if I had $25,000 for treatment, I would just spend that getting high, you know. So there was no chance I was going to do it. So I came to the mean streets of Fort Wayne, a very scared person, because I'm from small town Indiana, and Fort Wayne is very intimidating when you're not from here, you know. what is the word I'm looking for? I guess I was ignorant of how it really is, because you don't know no better. If you don't see it and you don't know it, the only thing you learn is from the nightly news. And the nightly news is it's a scare tactic to keep us all listening to them, you know? So I thought Fort Wayne, the first thing I was going to do was get robbed and murdered up here. And neither one of them's happened yet, you know? I've met some of the nicest people on the streets of Fort Wayne. And I was on the streets of Fort Wayne. A homeless ministry found me, and the guy said, "What are you here for?" And I told him treatment. And he said, "For real, that's what you want?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, what if I could find you a treatment place? Would you go to it?" And I said, "Yeah, I would go to it." He said, "What if I could find you a treatment place right now? Would you go to it?" I said, "Yeah, I would go to it." And he got on the phone, and I think he talked to Elvis Netterville, who was heading up a place called the Catalpa Street Center, I think. And like the forefathers of that are Mick, Bob, Gonzalee. Am I missing anybody? But they dropped me off at this center, and these guys didn't even know I was there. And Gonzalee came in that Monday, and he said, "It doesn't usually work this way. We don't let people just get dropped off, and you know, but you've already been here for 2 days. I'm high revving. I'm a goofball." Everybody there was very laid back. One guy had just had heart surgery. And I'm like a Looney Tunes character, and they're all super mellow. So he said, "I don't know if it's going to work out, but we're going to give it a chance." Well, they wound up giving the place to somebody else, the Hobson House. It was a 12-step recovery program. And I was disgruntled because they took away... We had four guys in the old YMCA. It was the Washington House, the Kelly House. So it was a big place. And there was four of us living in there just doing whatever we wanted. Carl used to come pick us up and take us to get groceries. And he said, "I don't play well with others." That's one of the biggest things that I've learned from Carl, that I don't play well with others. It's because I don't have a filter. It broke when I was a kid, I think, just from being scared and everything. I was in that program. I was 9 months sober, I think, and the Hobson House took it over. And I started getting high with one of the guys. And that night I was in, you know, my buzz had wore off, because some people think it was because I was high. I sat down in my bunk, and in the corner of my bunk it started glowing like a yellow glow. And I could feel the presence of Jesus, or of God. I don't know which one it was, because I didn't know anything about it, right? I'm in a religious program, and I was mad when they wanted me to read a Bible. You know, I was disgruntled at God, but it started glowing over in the corner, and I just broke down. I cried like a baby, and of course Doug had to come in and ruin it. He's like, "What's going on?" "Oh, never mind." I'm like, "You just ruined it." He's like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "I'll talk to you tomorrow." But right then and there, I was like, "I'm going to be a better person. I'm turning over my leaf." That was clearly God, and he was trying to speak to me. And I got my Bible out that I had for about 2 years. It's even got my name on it. And I started reading it. But I wasn't listening to the truth in it, right? I didn't know that I was worthy and loved, and God had a plan for me. So I wound up getting kicked out of there for getting high. I went to a different treatment facility, which the homeless ministry paid for. And the first thing I thought to do would be to get a girlfriend, because she would fix me right. She had no problems, no drug addiction in her story. The same job for 30 years. I used to joke with her that she had the same, we're kind of alike. You had the same job for 30 years, and I've had 30 jobs in 1 year. And we'd laugh about that. It's not true, but it's close. I had 18 in 1 year, and I threw away two W-2s, so I really had 20. But that was back in the Clinton days, when you could quit this job, go to that job, then go back to that job. I got booted out of there, of course, and but something had changed in me, because I had grown a conscience, because I did start reading this book, and some of it subliminally sucked into my head. And I knew what I was doing was wrong. You know, I used to have two demons on my, you know, yeah, do it. No, do it worse. And they were replaced by a conscience with somebody saying, no, don't do that. And the first thing I knew, because I read this, and I'm going to read this, I'm only going to read a couple things, because I read this and I didn't even know what it meant at the time. And if you don't know him, you don't know it, right? You don't know what God has for you if you've never talked to him. But I read this, and it's Jeremiah 29:11, which most people know. It says, For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. I did not know that. But I started to believe it. Because I seen things changing in my life. I knew that I had to get back to the 13th step house. That's where I got sober. I started my journey in 2017 in August, and I re-upped it and re-upped it. I've had a couple sobriety dates, but my latest one is January 27th of 2019. I've been sober ever since then. And like I said, I'm an out-of-control barbarian, and if I can stay sober for 2 years and 4 months, anybody can stay sober. Anybody can follow what God tells them to do. Sometimes I forget that all this, everything that I'm going to say to you and everything that has happened in my life is only because of God. If I forget to say that, just know it, right? I don't, because I might say something like, I did it. I didn't do anything, right? Everything that's happened to me in my life is because of Jeremiah 29:11. It was a plan that he had wrote in my life, back when the earth was still cooling, probably back before Adam and Eve were here. He already knew my name. He already knew how long I was going to live. He already knew my ups and downs. And he sat there hoping. And he was hoping that I would grab his hand one of these days. And I have grabbed his hand, and my whole life has changed. Once when I was kicked out of that house, I went to Fryman Square and smoked spice with a couple of my homeless friends, because I was living under the Wall Street Bridge for a while. And I met them through the homeless ministry that got me into my first house. And I took a hit of spice, and this was me, and I floated out of my body, and the devil's hand grabbed me, and it started pulling me to hell. And it was so horrible, and it hurt so bad. And I swear, you know, once again, was it me getting high, or once again, was I dead and getting pulled to hell? I believe wholeheartedly I was dead and was getting pulled to hell by the demon. And I could feel stones going through my flesh, and they were breaking my bones. I could, like, see the bones breaking, and it was so hot. And I used the name, you know, back in my addiction and stuff. I used Jesus's name, but not in a good way. You know, the GD word, which is totally offensive to me now. But I was, and I said, Jesus, you know, instead of, you know, that's cool. I was like, geez, that's weird, you know, or Jesus, that's, you know. And I think I was saying, like, Jesus, this hurts. But he thought I was asking for him. And he grabbed me by the hand, and he pulled me out of hell. And I fell onto the cement, and it was 93 degrees. And I swear I could see my breath. Like, it was so much colder on this side of hell, you know, that 93 degrees was, like, freezing compared to where I just came from. And Jesus rescued me out of it just because he heard his name, you know. And it wasn't, I don't know if it was intended for him, but I just know that he saved me. But I am a very ignorant human being, and I was heavily addicted to drugs and chaos, and as soon as I got out of the ambulance and out of the hospital, I ran right back down there and I bought $5 worth of spice and I started getting high again. Just knowing that God saved me, and I knew it, and He's did it countless times if I look back on my life. I'm sure any of us could look back and see those near misses. They were near misses because it was supposed to be, because God made it that way. He doesn't make mistakes, but they're all learning lessons for me, and that was one that keeps me on track where I am now. That and getting that conscience that told me how bad I hurt other people. I didn't do this for other people. I did this because I seen a glimpse of life without addiction. I did make it a couple month stretch, and I realized how much easier life was when I wasn't lying, cheating, stealing, begging, borrowing, plotting. You know, that's all it was, is I was totally controlled by a substance. And like step one says, that I was, my life had become unmanageable. And it was managed by drugs and alcohol. And as long as I had that, I thought I was okay. But I have a new manager in my life. And I ask him every morning when I wake up, what's the plan? What are we going to do today? And it's awesome because I don't have any plans. I haven't planned anything for 3 years. I haven't tried to do anything. I haven't set a goal. A lot of people say you need to set goals, and maybe I'm different. Maybe some people need to, maybe some people don't. Maybe some people need to just listen to God and He'll tell them what to do on a daily basis. And that's how it worked for me. Today on the radio, I only listen to Christian music now because I had to change everything in my life. I used to listen to angry music, which sounded like me boo-hooing when I was doped up, you know. Society was out to get me, the courts, the judges, the cops, my parents, you know. I was 45 years old and still blaming my parents for stuff. Lyle has said it many times that I lived my whole life stuck as an 8-year-old, still boo-hooing over getting spanked when I was 8 years old. It wasn't until I dropped that rock, you know, there's a book called Drop the Rock. Wasn't until I dropped that rock that I floated to the surface of life and I managed to be able to swim. And that was all through forgiveness. For me, forgiveness was the key to everything. To forgive the guy that beat me and made me feel worthless my whole life. When I did that, my whole life began to change. The green was a little bit greener. The sun was a little bit brighter. The stars twinkled a little bit more. Everything was beautiful. And I cried a lot. You know, and I wasn't supposed to cry because real men don't cry and all that stuff, right? I cry all the time. I cry when I hear a good song in church that meets my feelings for the day. I cry when I see a beautiful sunset when I'm driving in the mountains. You know what? There was one thing I was never going to do in my whole life if I kept being addicted to drugs. I was never going to drive through the mountains and see the beautiful sunshine. I did nothing except chase drugs. I didn't care about the sunshine or the birds singing. They drove me nuts. They made me mad. What are they doing waking me up? I just got to sleep, you know? And now it's beautiful, you know, flowers and smelling them and crying, and I'm on my motorcycle singing, you know, praise songs to God. Which is another thing I would have never had, because how can you get a motorcycle if you're spending every dime you have on methamphetamines, you know? Plus, I knew if I got a motorcycle when I was all whacked, I was dead. You know, I wanted to die, but I didn't want to die. You know, I was too scared to commit suicide because I'd screw that up. You know, I've never did anything right in my life. And I'm glad that I read this book, right? And I learned the truth. The truth is, everything that ever happened to me and every failure, most of my failures were not failures at all, because I never stuck it around till the end to see if I could do it or not. I just assumed I couldn't, right? All these people were telling me about what kind of a potential I had and how much potential and the great things I could do. And I told them to shut up. They don't know me at all, right? I'm like, you don't know me. You don't know what I can do. You don't, you know. And I didn't know me. You know, there's all kinds of stuff I could do if I set my mind to it, probably. But I'm not going to, because not thinking is working pretty good for me right now. Just listening to God. And I swear, most of you probably won't believe my life story since I came to Christ and got baptized. Everything I try to do just happens. I don't even try to do it. It just falls in line. The other day I was saying, it was kind of like I'm walking through the woods and the trees just get out of the way a little bit so I can walk almost a straight line now. Like if I'm walking down the street, they all turn green, you know, and I can just keep walking. I don't even have to pause because God's just doing everything. There's one of the promises. I suddenly realized God's doing for me what I could not do for myself. And God is doing everything for me. One day I'm walking down the street. I just got back into the recovery house after being kicked out. And I'm like, why is my phone? And it's the high school equivalency program. And I've had that number in my phone since 2017, when I was always going to get my GED and start turning my life around, which was the great lie that I told my mom and my friends and my girlfriends to get them off my back, right? One of these days, I'm going to change my ways. I did not know that that was not a lie. It was the truth, but it was in God's timing, not my timing. So I said, hello. And she said, this is a high school equivalency program. I said, did Jesus tell you to call me? She says, no, you called me. And I said, that's silly. What are you doing? And she said, well, I said, I guess I'm supposed to see what you guys have to offer. She said, well, why don't you come by at 4, because we're starting classes today. So I went there at 4 because I figured that's what God wanted me to do, because I asked him for his will, and his will butt dialed HSC. So within a month, I had gotten my GED, because it was one of them things that I put off for no reason, because I couldn't do it. And I knew I couldn't do it. And then I go there and I take the practice test, and she says, you know, you could just take the test and do it. But my whole life, I didn't think I could do it, so I'm going to screw around a little bit and take a couple classes. And then one day she finally said, you need to quit screwing around, because you're just playing around. You know you could pass the test. Just go take the test, or you're going to come back 5 years from now with the same sob story. So I just took the test and got my GED. I did pray for it. I prayed for God to give me that knowledge. I don't pray for stuff for myself. I pray for you guys. I pray for strangers. I pray for the still sick and suffering alcoholic, for his children. I come in here every day, every time we meet. I come in here almost first thing, and I get down on my knees right here, and I pray. I was married in this church, which is crazy, because I was never going to be married, you know? Nobody's ever going to love me enough to marry me. And I got married in this church just because I love this place so much. I've been coming here solid this time, right? Because I've been here before, and then I was gone, and then I was back, and then I was gone, and then I came back, and I was here for about a year, and they asked me if I'd like to speak, and I felt very honored by that, because they don't want me up here speak and then gone 2 weeks from now. Yeah. You know, so they seen something in me. They seen that I was going to get it this time, right? I don't know if maybe God told them that was going to happen that way. But I've stuck it through. You know, I haven't left. If I do miss once in a while, but my wife's schedule is totally different than mine. And so I love my wife because I have a wife. Since I'm such a different person, I am probably a pretty good husband, because I'm quick to ask for forgiveness. I'm quick to say I'm sorry, even if I didn't do it. I am quick to realize that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. I mean, he sent me the perfect woman. And in no way in my life did I think I would ever meet such a perfect person. And I met her in a place where I thought that I would never meet somebody that was going to be right for me. And then, and it was pretty crazy.
Where did you meet her?
I met her in AA.
Okay.
And I was always told not to, two sickos do not make somebody that's well. She has coming up on 7 years of sobriety. She has, I stalked her. I listened, I went to Angola. She went to meetings in Angola, so I'm driving 54 miles to listen to what she's going to say in a meeting because I don't want to waste any more time dating girls that I'm not going to, you know, I just try to keep the temptation out of my life because I'm trying to be a new person. And in a new person that's trying to follow God does not believe in premarital sex, so I was trying to eliminate the temptation and keep it as far away from me as possible. So, you know, I do a lot of praying to God, and God kind of pointed her out to me. I did a lot of listening to her, and everything she said was just in line with me, right? And when a man and woman come together, they come under one flesh, and it's for God, and he's at the helm. And so she is not knowledgeable in this, but that is what I am doing in her life, because that is my job as the man, and I'm that's what this tells me. Not trying to be sexist, but the guy is supposed to lead his family, and that's what I'm trying to do. And she's a believer now. It's undeniable because the things that God has did in my life. So after the GED, I graduated the drug program I was in. They offered me a job. I never filled out. So since coming to God, I didn't have to fill out any applications. I didn't have to try. I didn't have to get any numbers. I already had everything, right? And he provided it for me. A few months after that, I managed to get my license, which I was never going to get again because I would just get drunk and get it taken away again. So why even bother getting it? That just happened. Like, somebody gave me a card. They said, this is a voluntary lawyer program. So I called it, and within 2 months, I was driving on a paper permit and then got my real license and then got a motorcycle license. And I've always wanted a motorcycle, and I always knew that I was dead if I got one. And now that I'm sober and I can think, and I have God's protection around me, I have one. And that's fun. These are all material things that God gave me that don't matter to me. I do enjoy them. I do like riding a bike, but I like the peace of mind that he has in my head, right, and in my heart. And I know there are things of the world, and this Bible tells me to be scared of the things of the world. So... So I do enjoy them, but I do not idolize them. I do love my wife, but I do not idolize her. I do love my family, but I do not idolize them. I keep everything. What I believe keeps me sober is knowing that stuff happens and being prepared for it. In this past year, my brother's been diagnosed with cancer. My sister's been diagnosed with cancer. I got married and had a heart attack 13 days after I was married. And there's no lemon law on husbands, ladies. Mm-hmm. My wife checked. But I felt really bad for her. But I wasn't scared, you know. I knew that I didn't get this far. God didn't take me this far to let me die on the operating table. Because a lot of people knew that I was going to have open heart surgery. I got some good scars. And everybody said, are you scared? Are you worried? Are you frightened? And I said, no, I'm not. Not at all. I have no doubt that either way I win. It's a win-win for me. But most people don't see it that way. Because the biggest win would be is if I didn't make it, I just beat all you guys to heaven. Right? And second place to being in heaven, which is the ultimate place, is being alive and actually gaining in health, because I was doomed to die if I didn't have the surgery. So I have more time on this planet to enjoy the birds and the sunrise and wind in my hair and working in the addiction field, because God has put me in place. Like they say, is there humor allowed? God has did some of the biggest jokes that I've ever been witness to. He put me in a management position at a rehabilitation facility, right? So the 13-step house, I now manage 46 guys, right? When I couldn't manage to stay high for 5 minutes, stay sober for 5 minutes, now I get the joy of talking to an alcoholic and a drug addict every day. It is one of the best jobs, and it is the worst job all at the same time, because many of you guys know it. Many of you guys are in treatment right now. Many of you guys have been in treatment and been out of treatment, just like me. And that's the worst part, is seeing somebody getting ready to fail, and they don't listen to you. You know, no matter what I do. I mean, I've been kicked out of every halfway house in this town. I've been kicked out of the mission more times than anybody I know. And people told me it was going to happen, you know, and I was too smart and I didn't listen to them. But everything that I've been through is not just a testimony. It's guidance for other people now. You know, the ones that will actually listen to me are the ones, once they come back and say, "You were right, man." Because sometimes I can tell them their story, because it's my story. You know, I've been kicked out of there, and a lot of them get kicked out the exact way, you know. But I have one more thing to read for you. This is Jesus is Calling. I don't know if any of you guys know what this book is. But it is written. It usually has a couple sermons in it, things from the Bible. It is as if Jesus was going to say something to you. So I read this thing upon awakening. And this one came across... I've had this book for I don't know how many years. I have notes all over in it, and scribbles and scratches and highlights. But this is my favorite one, because it's kind of like my story. It's kind of maybe somebody else's in here story. It's what God would say to you if he is in front of you right now, or on some other day. But it says, don't be so hard on yourself. I can bring good even out of your mistakes. Your finite mind tends to look backward, longing to undo decisions that you've come to regret. This is a waste of time and energy, leading only to frustration. Instead of floundering in the past, release your mistakes to me. Look to me in trust, anticipating that my infinite creativity can weave both good choices and bad choices into a lovely design. Because you are human, you will still continue to make mistakes. Thinking you should live an error-free life is symptomatic of pride. Your failures can be sources of blessings, humbling you and giving you empathy for other people and their weaknesses. Best of all, failure highlights your dependency on me. I'm able to bring beauty out of the morass of your mistakes. Trust in me and see what I will do. And that one just strikes me... because he's done that. All my bad choices are lessons learned that I can bring out of my bag of tricks, you know, because I've been through it. I mean, you guys have been through it. My whole life has changed, and it's just from reading this book. If you do read this book, try to memorize as much of it as you can. And you can hear it in the songs, and you can think in your head, hey, that's Jeremiah 29:11. You know, they're beautiful things that you can help people with. All the information in this book is the truth. It can't be It can't be a lie. It was wrote by God. I don't know how long I've been up here. And I don't want to start rambling on. But, I mean, if any of you guys are like me and you're sick of living the way you used to live and you want to try a change, get this book, talk to Gonza Lee, talk to Marvin, talk to Lyle, talk to these yahoos, talk to Carl. He plays well with others. Come out of the darkness and the misery and become a happy person. Get, you know, the opposite of fear is faith, right? So get a little faith and don't be scared of what God has in plan for you, because it's beautiful. And you haven't seen anything yet, you know? And that's all I got.
Thank you.